T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Welcome back, Jay Binkley, Serta producing the operation. Both of us in search of our very own Dieter. Both of us do not have one. But Dieter, Mahomes guy, back. By the way, the text line 69306, saying that Belichick and Steve sit around and eat Salisbury steak TV dinners. That's kind of a popular TV dinner. It's always Salisbury steak. Seems like they always serve that crap in school. Like, that was always the thing.
Or they just, like, crush frozen pizzas. They don't know how to make anything.
No.
All they know how to do is watch film.
Was there any school food you actually liked? Was there any day, like, you get real excited? Ah, it's pizza day. Or it's. Be honest with you, I thought it all sucked, to be honest with you.
A la carte line spicy chicken sandwiches.
School lunch, spicy chicken sandwiches. I shouldn't laugh because I eat the ones here out of the vending machine. Very good chicken sandwiches, by the way. I don't think Popeyes or Chick-fil-A have anything to worry about, but pretty good. I told you McDonald's is getting on the action. They're test market down in Texas somewhere. They're coming out with the chicken sandwich, too. Pretty soon, that's all we're going to have is chicken sandwiches everywhere. Come in for this chicken sandwich. It's going to be the best. You know? I'm shocked my mom hasn't had that for Thanksgiving yet or something. Like, hey, I'm getting ready. Popeye's chicken sandwiches. You know what? I'd probably be good with that. Text line says, chicken nuggets or taco day. Seems like the taco sauce is always the same. They must have bought it from, like, the same. You know all that stuff they buy is in the big containers, right? It's always that big, big containers. I brought my lunch a lot, to be honest with you. I would bring it. Wasn't a big fan of buying it. My kid won't buy it. She has to bring it. You know? You know what? You know what my kid bought the other day at the store? My 16-year-old girl. So proud.
What?
Mahomes Banjo Crunch.
Why?
She's like, it's good, Dad. And it's like, hey, I'm proud of you. Usually, you know, you could have gone Frosted Flakes or something, but you wanted the Mahomes Banjo Crunch.
I don't really eat cereal. Not that I dislike cereal.
It's low in sugar. Good for the kids.
I just don't buy cereal because then I have to buy milk, and I will always forget about the milk, and it'll just go bad.
But you could eat cereal without milk. I mean, it's one of those things you can.
Yeah, I'm not going to do that. Gross.
Have you ever had beer in your cereal, like when you've been real hungover?
No.
You have never done that?
No. Is that a thing?
I don't know. I have done it, though.
That sounds awful.
It was awful.
Did it make you feel better?
No. Not at all. Again, it was a long night, man. Very long night. But it was beer in the cereal. It's one of those things. But yes, she bought Mahomes Banjo Crunch, and I was, because she's used to it because I went out, you know, like an idiot. Well, not an idiot. They're actually going to be valuable, right? Just like those Hallmark ornaments to get the Mahomes. You wouldn't believe the price in these things. Even like the, I don't know, Aikman and a Brady, and I buy one of those every year when my mom gets it, actually. But those things are worth like $300 or $400. And they got the Mahomes out now. You can have Mahomes on your Christmas tree. Who doesn't want freaking Mahomes on your Christmas tree? Matter of fact, I used to have a Christmas tree dedicated just to football ornaments. It was my football tree. And the lights, Serta, were red and white.
I've been thinking about getting a Christmas tree this year. I've never put up one, like, as an adult that has lived on my own. I've never put up my own Christmas tree or been really holiday person or, like, festive person who decorates their house or something like that.
Me either, but
I finally have a space where I could do something like that if I wanted to. I'm not going to put up lights or anything, but I was thinking about just going and buying one of those fake trees, like trying to get in the spirit a little
bit. There's nothing wrong with that at all, man. There's nothing wrong with it at all. You know what? Here's the thing. I'm divorced. When I was married, we had crap everywhere. Like, literally, like 5 or 6 Christmas trees. They're all over the place. Loved holidays. 6-foot mummy that talked and all this. I mean, just.
See, I would have more fun doing that. I should have done that for Halloween. But I would have more fun buying a bunch of that stuff.
But it was overboard, man. It was overkill. And I'm not going to do that, man. As a single guy, I'm just not going to do that. But I have a kid, 16 years old. So I got a tree. And I don't have any ornaments on it. And I've got plenty. Keep my dad in mind. Dad worked for Hallmark forever. Got a ton of them. Just lights. I do like lights. Like, I do enjoy Chase lights, whatever. Like, I have gotten into that. I guess I should put the Mahomes on there. Like, that would be the only ornament on a tree is my Patrick Mahomes. Which, I have the cereal box. See, I can do this crap now, man. I have my Mahomes Magic Crunch on the mantle. With my little mini football helmets. You think I could have gotten away with this before, Steven? You think I could have gotten away with my mini football helmets on the mantle? The answer is no. The answer is no. Big Arrowhead Stadium picture right there in the living room?
Nah, I mean, you got to have your own separate space for that. I'm not even that ridiculous.
I have the Chiefs 60 years banner right there as you walk in.
I've got an addiction to buying, like, superhero art and different stuff like that, and I like framing it and hanging it up. And I've got a bunch of that stuff all over the place, but I know that I'm not going to decorate my entire house with it.
I think most guys deep down want to do that. They have a lot of sports memorabilia and they want to use it. There's probably a lot of people went out and bought those old Arrowhead Stadium seats. I mean, I would love that. You have that in front of your TV to watch the games with. I mean, they're not that comfortable, but you can make them that way. Or around your bar. I think a lot of guys want to do that. But let me tell you guys, you get single, you can do whatever the hell you want. Now, I do have a daughter, and she lives with me. And so I was warned not to do it because she's not going to like it. She didn't care. So whatever you want to do, Dad. But I do put Christmas stuff up for her. But I'll be honest with you. I think there's a lot of guys that would like to do this. Like, if guys were in charge of decorating their house, that's all it would be. It would be football helmets and Mahomes Magic Crunch on the mantle. There's no reason. I mean, never mind. It's a different story, but I think that's what guys want to do. Frank Clark. Frank Clark was a guy for the Chiefs that I had a tremendous amount of want. Like, when Frank Clark came here, I was like, this is what the Chiefs need. Like, the Chiefs, I think they were pushed around last year, last couple years, pushed around. Now, they had some dogs on the team. Like, Justin Houston was a dog. I definitely think Chris Jones a dog. But they were kind of missing that toughness. Just that guy that's going to get in your face. He's going to tell Phillip Rivers, don't grab the bull because you're going to get the horns. Like he did Phillip Rivers. That was great. But Frank Clark has an attitude. I mean, it was not easy for Frank Clark growing up. It wasn't. And the guys had a chip on his shoulder. He did get paid, and that's the biggest concern, living up to that contract. Get $100 million, and we're sitting down here going, man, you got to produce for $100 million, man. What are you doing? Do something. I mean, there was a lot of D Ford. Keep in mind, when D Ford was there, people didn't want D Ford. I was never a D Ford guy. He finally showed something. The toughness angle, I don't think, was there. Frank Clark provided something different that D Ford did on that. And their numbers are very similar this year. And D Ford's been banged up. I mean, he's inactive all the time. He's always hurt. He does have, a sack and a half more than Frank Clark at this point. But it was that toughness factor. And they had to get tough. D Ford was not a guy to me that was going to set the edge for the Chiefs. Could he get after the quarterback? Did he become a good pass rusher? He absolutely did. Like, he was quick. I remember when D Ford got here, you know, people used the word Derek Thomas, which you never, never, never compare anybody to that. That guy was the quickest guy off the ball we've ever seen. The guy could just judge the snap count. Heck, Neil Smith wouldn't even look at the football. He just looked across the line at Derek Thomas. When's he going? Then he would go. He was lightning quick. And D Ford was, and I think a lot of times he over-pursued the quarterback early on. And keep in mind, Tom Bali stayed around here. I think Tom Bali got two more contracts from the Chiefs because they weren't ready to hand over the reins to D Ford. It was one of those picks that I had to talk myself into. You know, the draft D Ford, you know, which direction they go in, you know, they have a plan. Because Dorsey would always draft somebody as a succession plan. Whoever he drafted, you knew whoever was the incumbent was going to leave. And I think D Ford was drafted to part ways with Tom Bali. But they couldn't do it. D wasn't ready. And I always thought D should be good because he's got two teachers right there. He's got Tom Bali and he had Justin Houston. Two guys with different moves. Different moves to get to the quarterback, and I thought that's perfect. Pick the brain of those guys. So when Frank Clark came in here, I saw a little bit of that. You know, I saw some vintage Justin Houston. I saw a guy that could set the edge. And again, if you're switching from 3-4 to 4-3, and you're going from that two-gap responsibility to one-gap to 4-3 to stop the run, set the edge, which they got to do because the biggest threat in this league right now to the Kansas City Chiefs, in my opinion, is Lamar Jackson. You got to keep him inside the pocket and hope you get that interior rush with Chris Jones coming up the middle or Colin Saunders, the way that he's really developing into a fine player. Mike Pinnell, you know, stuffing the run there in the middle, but setting the edge. And Frank Clark was great in training camp. He was good. He talked the talk. He talked a lot. I like that. I like the dog in Frank Clark. Like, I think the Chiefs were missing a little bit of that, getting your face. It's hard to get in somebody's face when you're that bad, when you're getting ran over. Like, it's tough to have that kind of, you know, peacock walk about you. I've always likened it to Mike Moustakas. You know, we saw that leadership he had in Houston for that comeback. I think he always had that inherent ability to be a leader, but he wasn't producing on the field. And once you start producing, the only time I've seen this was someone doesn't produce, and because the leader is Jason Hayward with the Cubs, because he wasn't having a good year, but he supposedly inspired the Cubs to come back and win the World Series during that rain delay. That's the only time I've ever seen that happen. But you got to produce to be a leader. And Frank Clark was walking the walk, man. He was good in St. Joe. I came away with impressed. I think Pete Sweeney was definitely impressed with him. He was there every day. Brandon Kiley, I think Serta. I don't know your feelings 100% on Frank Clark. I don't think we ever had that discussion. Were you for the Frank Clark signing, or were you more on the D Ford side? Because people were in two camps.
I wasn't in favor of it, no. Because I don't think that, and granted, and people will look back on it now and be like, oh, D Ford's been hurt this year again because he's soft. D Ford's having a nice season. Like, and what San Francisco signed him to was a very team-friendly deal. It's not actually that, like, massive of a deal. You had to trade away assets to make Frank Clark one of the three highest-paid defenders in the NFL. I'm never going to agree with that. I don't think that that's smart business, and I don't think that that's a good move. And what you've gotten out of Frank Clark says that that wasn't a good move. Like, he's carried himself well here in Kansas City. He has tried to make it appear as if he is a leader on the defense. And sure, he was dealing with this neck injury since training camp that has kind of hampered his play a little bit, but now he's hurt again. So I don't see how you can look at that and say that that was a cost-effective move or that was the right way to go when you now have Chris Jones, who looks like he's the best interior pass rusher in the NFL behind Aaron Donald, and you can't really pay him because you went out and you traded away draft picks to make Frank Clark the third highest paid defender in the league.
Clowney looks like the move, didn't it? John Schneider,
yes,
baller move with
that
Clowney.
That was a cost-effective move.
That was a baller move, man.
It was a cost-effective move. You get a season of Jadeveon Clowney, and it has made their defense. And the Seahawks went out and got Quandre Diggs, too, from the Lions, and he has completely changed their secondary. Their secondary has been much better over the last 3 or 4 weeks than it was earlier on in the season after they went out and they made that trade. They have made a bunch of cost-effective moves to make their defense better, and right now they look like they are one of the five best teams in the NFL and like they can legitimately contend in the postseason this year.
From the 913, when did Derek ever set the edge? I never said Derek. Did I ever say Derek Thomas set the edge? I wasn't talking about that. Derek Thomas was just a dominant pass rusher. We're not talking about that defense. That defense was great, man. Derek Thomas is in the Hall of Fame. To me, Derek Thomas, the best pass rusher I've ever seen. I wasn't even talking about setting the edge. I was talking about this defense. Steve Spagnuolo's defense. His prototypical guys. A lot of them the same size, man. Same height, same size. It's like they're cloned. You know, Ogba, Okafor. You know, those dudes are the same guy. It's that type that you want. And Ogba was a tremendous run stuffer. He was third best in the AFC West, according to Pro Football Focus, before he left. But the sentiment for Frank Clark was he's not producing. I heard that all the time. You know, and I've been a big Frank Clark supporter. I still am. But, you know, had a little egg on the face, to be honest with you, Steven, because he wasn't living up to what I said he would live up to. And then we find out about the pinched nerve. We find out about not being able to feel a couple fingers. And I know what you're saying. Hey, it's football. Toughen up, buttercup, and go out there and play. But that stuff does affect you, especially in his position. And he was playing through that. And the Chargers game in Mexico City, that turned some heads about Frank Clark. Now, let's be fair about it. Who was he going against? Pipkins, third-round pick, Division II. Again, you're saying, well, it's third-round pick. Third-round picks in the NFL play. Sometimes third and fourth-round picks don't work out. They just don't. You remember Kavari Russell? Yeah. Sometimes high picks don't work out. But he's going to work out. I mean, the guy showed a lot of things last year. And, again, he played Division II football. You know, he's playing against teams like Pitt State and Northwest Missouri State. You know, no slight to them. That's a huge difference to the NFL. There's a reason why guys are playing Division II football instead of D1. There's a difference why guys are playing 1AA football instead of D1. They were passed by. Not saying 1AA players aren't good in the NFL, because they clearly are, and we've certainly seen our fair share of them. Chris Klieman, a bunch of them at North Dakota State. But sometimes it takes a while. You know, for Colin Saunders, he was a guy that a lot of people were kind of half looking at him. He was dominant at Western Illinois, but people want to know, could he play against good competition? He showed that in the Senior Bowl, and I think the Senior Bowl helped out Colin Saunders, I think, more than any other player last year was what he got as far as the draft stock bump by being in the Senior Bowl and really dominating against really good Division I talent, which at the Senior Bowl, you're getting the best of the best. That's people's job interview. It's where they go to show what they can do at the next level. They're not there to enjoy the sights in Mobile, Alabama. They're there to play football. And Frank, when he came here, I felt the pressure was on him, and I've seen this pressure before with athletes from the Royals. Ask Alex Gordon about it. Ask Ian Kennedy about it. I've seen guys get the big contract, and are they living up to it? And it's a certain amount of pressure to it because you're the organization's highest-paid player. They've never paid anybody that. Now, like, some guys you're not worried about that with. And we've seen Justin Houston, Eric Berry. Did they ever fully live up to their contract? No. Not many people actually do in sports live up to the money. You think Bryce Harper's living up to his money in Philadelphia? No. Will he at some point? Maybe. Or will he not be the player you thought he was that he got paid for? Pat Mahomes is going to get $200 million. But, you know, he's the type of guy that probably will live up to it. I think that is a safe bet going forward. I actually think Chris Jones is a safe bet because the arrow's pointing up. You know, Herm Edwards is always like, the arrow's pointing down or the arrow's pointing sideways, don't re-sign him. You know, the Patriots have done that for years. The Colts did that for years. That's why they were good. You know, Ty Law, great player. Belichick says, I'm not paying this guy. He's too old. Arrow's going down or it's going sideways, he's gone. Likes the guy. Ty Law was one of the best ever, but it's like the arrow's going down. The Colts had a way of paying five or six guys. They put all their eggs in one basket. A lot like the Cowboys did with their big three. They put a lot of their eggs in one basket with their contracts. But the Colts did it. They got rid of Edgerrin James, who was dominant for that organization. He went by the wayside. They draft Joseph Addai out of LSU, and they win a Super Bowl with him because they thought this was interchangeable. And pass rushers are hard to get. I remember what it was last year or the year before, I looked it up. The top 20 sackers in the NFL, 15 of them were first-round picks. Like, we've seen corners go down and other guys, you know, try to fill that role and be good. We've definitely seen running backs go down. The hardest thing to replace is pass rusher. Not that many people can do it. Not many people have that moves. These tackles are so big, so agile, so strong in what they do. Pass rushing is legitimately a specialty. It's why they're paid high. It's why Chase Young, to me, is the best football player in this country. The pass rusher at Ohio State can't be blocked with one guy. He single-handedly wrecks teams. It's why Ohio State is number one in the country. It's why Ohio State is going to meet LSU for the national title because he's so damn dominant at what he does. But Frank Clark brought it here, and he didn't live up to his expectations right away. He didn't live up to them, and people questioned the move. People had revisionist history. They had cognitive dissonance. Oh, we shouldn't have got rid of D. Ford. Look at what Justin Houston's doing. He's got a sack in six straight games. We shouldn't have let these guys go. And I can listen to your argument about Justin Houston. Why? He's in the same scheme the Chiefs are running now. He's in a 4-3. Same thing we do here. The Colts run the same thing that Spags brought into Kansas City, even though I think Spags' defense is more of a hybrid. We want to say 4-3, but it's more of a nickel all the time. It's why their first depth chart was a nickel situation for that. But this game against the Patriots, and Frank Clark was a limited participant, and I really felt at the Chargers game, the momentum started to go towards him. I did. I saw people start saying, all right, I like Frank Clark now. I like what he can do. And why wouldn't you? He was playing at 7,500 feet, which is a difference. Say it's an excuse. I'll call it reality. He played well in Mexico City. And not only that, he did it without depth. They didn't have the depth in that game. Hogba, Okafor, not there. You know, it's Tano. It's Frank Clark. It's Chris Jones. They played, 42 of his 47 snaps the week before that, playing – outside instead of inside. His sack came from the inside, believe it or not. But he lived up to it, and then you saw. Then he got hurt again, you know, that shoulder injury in the last game. This is the game to show it. Tom Brady has had a clean jersey. Desmond Moses, Chiefs linebacker. He'll be in tomorrow. Desmond is still around here, and he played for the Chiefs a couple years on and off. He was the last guy really to hit Tom Brady in a playoff game. He did it after the whistle. He got a penalty for it. He got fined $17,000 for it, but he hit him. And that's all you're asking for. Hit Tom Brady. Apply the pressure. Put the pass rush on him. Tom Brady can be a different cat when he's got pressure on him. With pressure this year, 49% quarterback rating. He had a 72% quarterback rating a season ago when teams were playing pressure to Tom Brady. That is a significant drop, 72% to 49%. You want to stop Tom Brady? Put some pressure on him. I know it sounds simple. Hit the quarterback or apply pressure. Easier said than done. The Patriots do allow pressure this year. This offensive line does let him go. Now, sack numbers, they're not there. They're very similar to the Kansas City Chiefs. He doesn't technically get sacked as much as usual. He throws the ball away. He panics. He throws it away because he didn't want to get hit. Dude's 42 years old. I don't blame him. But applying pressure, like this, to me, if Frank Clark is healthy and a go, which I think he will be, like Steven, he was turning the sentiment. Like there is no player that turned around the mindset of the fans more than Frank Clark this year, fair or unfair.
I think that's fair. I don't have that much to add to it.
Boots fits like everybody. Is it fair or unfair? That's all.
I think that's perfectly reasonable.
Chiefs need to re-sign TK cheap now. Tana was a beast at Villanova, man. Like Tana was a beast, and
yeah, at Villanova.
Hey, second defensive player drafted from Villanova since Howie Long, or the first since Howie Long. They're a good 1AA program, but he was dominant. But again, when the Chiefs drafted him, is more for redshirt purposes. When the Chiefs could not draft for redshirt purposes, they needed production. Yes, Juju Smith-Schuster came after in the second round, Tano Passanio. Not going to talk about that. Hindsight's 2020. Unless you're saying it the night of the draft, then it's not 2020. You know what I'm saying, Steven Serna? Rich Gannon, former MVP, played for the Chiefs, played for the Raiders. My favorite interview on 610 Sports Radio. Sean Salisbury's right up there as well. But Rich Gannon, my favorite by far, was on the drive yesterday, and he let it fly. We do that next.
Middays, brought to you by Crossroads Investment Lending, 610 Sports Radio.
Welcome back, Jay Binkley, Steven Serta. Text line 69306. Raiders got two pass rushers in one draft. They absolutely did. Cleveland Farrell. I think they were reading Kent Swanson's draft guide. They love some Farrell. And Max Crosby. Little Eastern Michigan, a little Maxion. Stand up. They did a great job. Mayock did a great job. Again, you know, going into last week, it might still be there. I haven't looked at their numbers right now, but more yards rushing, more yards from scrimmage, second most receiving yards, most rushing touchdowns, most sacks. Am I missing anything, Serta? Because that's a lot. By any rookies in the draft this year, Mayock nailed it. Nailed it. And that was my number one thing in the draft, is watching what he's going to do. Weren't you curious? You like the draft.
They're still missing Jonathan Abram, right?
Yeah, Abram's not even playing.
I think he's going to be a good player.
Hardest hitting guy in the SEC last year. That's how you do it, man. This is why I said, and it wasn't that I said the Raiders were good. Right? A little feedback there. Now, sometimes I think people don't pay attention to things like this whole Derek Thomas thing, not setting the edge. But the Raiders, I believe, are the biggest challenger to the Kansas City Chiefs, unless, you know, Drew Locke is the Messiah. I don't know. I mean, I don't like that combination with Fangio. I've told you I don't like that with the rookie quarterback. Now, he's good enough to do things on his own. Heck, he's already audible and out of plays. He might win despite what they have at head coach. But Chargers are going nowhere unless Tom ends up out there. What if the Chargers make a splash? And I heard Fesco and Kling talking about that this morning because Tom Brady is pissed. It looks like he might go somewhere else. He wanted an extension. They didn't give it to him. And again, he's 42 years old. He might. What more splash could you want if you're the Chargers than Tom Brady? Going into SoFi Stadium? Because right now, it's the Rams' place. And I don't even know if the people in L.A. even like either of them, to be honest with you. They seem to be fans of everybody else out there and not their own teams. Chargers fill up that soccer stadium they play in with fans from other teams. 30,000 people. I mean, you saw the Chiefs games, 10 to 15,000 Chiefs people out there. The Packers filled the whole damn thing. The Steelers filled the whole damn thing. They even played one of the Steelers songs that they play at Heinz Field. And let me tell you something. Chargers fans are pretty pissed about that. They always feel like they're the road team. They even talk about it. Keenan Allen talks about it.
There's like 12 Chargers fans, so it doesn't matter.
Did you see them, though, when they showed up in Mexico City? They were like rock stars at the hotel. I think they're more popular there than in California, to be honest with you.
They probably are.
People like them. They like the Bolts. They were real popular there. Phillip Rivers, they're going to take a stab at a quarterback. I mean, they're heading that direction. They got a good defense, too. Chargers, they played, geez, fifth-best defense in the NFL, and you get Derwin James back. That defense is good, man. Bosa's a freaking stud. They can play D. They just need a quarterback to be able to do something because Phillip Rivers right now is just throwing the ball up in the air to grab. Rich Gannon, former MVP, and a guy that, well, the Chiefs should have kept instead of Gerbeck. No question about that. But it's my favorite interview on the station, 4:30s on Wednesday. He comes on, and I always listen to it because I always like what Rich has to say. There's a couple interviews every week that I can't get away from. I like when Moss and Dayton Hughes and those guys come on. Speaking of Dayton Hughes, by the way, he and Joe Mays tonight, Players Only Show at 6 o'clock. That's very good stuff when those guys get there and there's no media people. It's just all players. It's all the guys that played the game, and they bring in former players. That's how I got a hold of Desmond, to be honest with you. Desmond Moses came in a couple weeks ago with Dayton Hughes. I'll be on tonight, 8 to 9, talking all college football and Rush the Field. Gary Pinkel joins me tonight. We're kind of going back and forth trying to figure out exactly to make it happen, but he's been joining me all year. There's a lot going on down there, obviously, with Barry Odom being fired at Mizzou, so I can't wait to talk to Gary. But anyway, Rich Gannon is must listen to radio when he comes on, and the first question that CDOT and Levine asked him was about that Texans game. How did the Texans have so much success against the New England Patriots?
A couple things. I think defensively they had a really good plan. They weren't going to let Julian Edelman catch the football, and so I think they forced Brady to throw it somewhere else. And, you know, they haven't had a lot of confidence in the tight end position right now. The other thing that was very noticeable is how many times Brady had good protection and yet couldn't find somebody open and had to throw the football away. And I just think that they're struggling right now at wide receiver to create separation, to win the one-on-one battles. I think teams are, you know, are able to rush five, so you're getting that extra rusher, and you're not as concerned about having to double, you know, Gronkowski or double, you know, one of these receivers. I think, you know, they feel pretty good about matching up with Julian Edelman. If they double anyone, it's usually Edelman in the slot or one of the backs out of the backfield like White. So, you know, I think Brady's frustrated right now. I think the offense has really struggled to score points. They settled for 3 field goals the first 3 quarters of that game before they kind of woke up in the fourth quarter and in garbage time. But I would tell you that they're struggling right now. And honestly, when I study Brady, I don't think that's the issue. People say, well, maybe he's not the same player. Maybe he's not throwing the ball as well. There's really no indication to me when I study him on tape that, you know, that's where the issues are. Right now, they don't have the explosiveness and the playmaking ability in the middle of the field with the tight end position, so that affects them on third down in the red zone. And they're just struggling right now. There's so much turnover to wide receiver position. The only guy he really trusts is Julian Edelman.
Edelman's a freak. He's 33 years old, though. But he finds he's a pain in the ass, to be honest with you, because he always finds that weakness. It's unbelievable what he's able to do is find as far as finding that crease. And Edelman's a case study, and don't always look at guys in the draft. I mean, as that position, he was a quarterback at Kent State, ends up being the wide receiver. DeAndre Hopkins, I told the story yesterday, you know, one of the top 3 receivers in the NFL, that's the guy he looks up to is Julian Edelman. They really needed Antonio Brown. They really needed him. To me, I was pissed the night they signed Antonio Brown because it was so Belichickian. They wanted to make a move, but the Steelers wouldn't do business with them. They didn't lose anything getting Antonio. They got exactly who they wanted. They wanted Antonio Brown in the offseason. The Steelers said, no, no. It's one thing when we go play you and our headsets don't work. You're not taking Antonio Brown. We'll ship him to the Raiders. Come on, Oakland. Let's do a deal. Let's do some business. And then he ends up there and what scores a touchdown right away when he plays for him. I'm so glad that dude is not with the Patriots. That changed the Chiefs and our whole mindset. We started worrying about corners. Oh, man, what's going to be the counter move? What's going to be the chess move of the Kansas City Chiefs now that Antonio Brown? They're desperate. Look what they gave up for Mohamed Sanu. Look what they gave up for him. They're desperate for this run. And again, that signing of Sanu tells me, I don't know how much longer they think this thing is going. They gave up way too much for him. They know their windows now. They're trying to cash in. It's what the Patriots do. But I am so glad Antonio Brown is not with the New England Patriots. This worked out too perfect for them. Everything happens good to them. I told somebody at the gym, we were discussing Antonio Brown when he was throwing a fit with the Raiders. I was like, he's going to end up with the Patriots. We all knew he was going to end up in New England. And then he did. You're like, what the hell, man? These guys keep winning. But you know what? It didn't work out, and he's gone. And that's huge for the Chiefs. Rich Gannon was asked why the Patriots can't have success running like they did last year. Again, this team, the running game really helped Tom Brady in the postseason. They ran for 160 yards on average a game in the postseason against the Chargers, the Chiefs, and the Rams. They were able to run the ball effectively. This year, it's 3.5 yards a carry. They're one of the worst running teams in the NFL. And I think it does affect Tom Brady to some extent. It's not that crutch to hand off like they've been doing with Tom Brady. And now it's cyclical. Now they're back to having a defense to help Brady out. But here's Gannon on why they're not having success running.
I think losing the center has hurt. The changes up front, there's no question. I don't think they have the blocking tight end that they did. Gronk, people don't talk about, you think about Gronk as a guy that was so good as a receiver, but he was a big body as an end man on line of scrimmage and did some really good inline blocking. So they don't have the ability, I think, to capture the edge. And here's another interesting statistic as I was studying for this game. Brady is actually on pace to set a record for most pass attempts in a season. So I think right now he's at 486 or something like that in 12 games. So he's averaging over 40 pass attempts a game. This is coming from a 42-year-old signal caller. And I think that's a problem right now for the Patriots. I mean, you're asking the guy to throw the ball 40 times a game. They're not running the football. And when you look at their backs, I mean, Sony Michel is a good back. But right now, when you watch him play, a lot of times you see Burkhead in there. You see James White in there. It's become more of a passing game. They fall behind a little bit. They're struggling to run the football. They get away from it. So I know Josh McDaniels has talked this week about continuing to improve and evolve as an offense. The reps are important, but it's hard to get a lot of reps this time of the year when you've got guys that are, in the training room, guys that are worn down and can't go out there and give you, 60 snaps of practice every week.
Gannon's good. He does his homework. Again, you can check out this full interview on demand, 610sports.com. It's much to listen to when he comes on. He does a TV show, too, as well. As flipping through the channels one day, CBS Sports Network. It's like a quarterback. It's like the players-only show with, Dana Hughes and Joe Mays. It's like all former quarterbacks. Steve Berline makes appearances, and Rich Gannon's on there. And they sit in a recliner, and Trent Green, I think, is on there. But they sit in a recliner, and they watch games and break it down from a quarterback's perspective. And it's really good, and I've been hooked on it ever since. Matter of fact, the DVR is set to that, like the franchise with the Chiefs always. And this is another show I like, too. You're going to laugh at this one. Marty and McGee, SEC Network, every Wednesday. Give me some of that. SEC football, why not? Rich Gannon was asked how the Patriots fix their problems this late in the season. Can it be done?
They do. I really think it starts with the running game. Senator Karras, he left. Ferentz came in there and played a little bit, so I don't know where Karras is. I know he had a knee sprain. I don't know if he's going to be up and available this week. I haven't seen the injury report yet, but To me, that's the key, because if they can get the running game going a little bit, again, we're not talking about, you know, a dynamic running game where they're rushing for 180 yards each week, but if they can just get a little bit more production out of the running game, then that'll help out in the play-action game. That's where Brady has always been so effective. And then and then the other thing they have to have is they need Harry, they need Dorsett, they need Myers, these receivers, to take the next step. I mean, Julian Edelman's going to be productive. You know, he's going to get 10 or 12 targets every game. I mean, that's a given. But when you look at, you know, Dorsett and Harry, and the two rookies, Harry and Myers, and then even Mohamed Sanu, that they need better production because they're not getting it from the tight end position.
I would say the old saying, you are who you are this late in the season, but we've seen seismic shifts with teams flipping that identity. 2006 Colts, you know, Larry Johnson's going to go run for 200 yards on him. Going to beat the Chiefs, Chiefs strength, running the football, Patriots weakness, stopping the run. What'd they do, man? They, you know, Manning was good, but that defense was really what carried the Colts. You know, they get Bob Sanders back. That was big for them. You know, there's that boost I think the defense needed. You know, the Patriots, you know, they were, what, giving up 112 yards a game rushing last year. Just gave up 40 yards per game to the Chargers, Chiefs, and Rams. I mean, they kind of flipped that identity. They got after the quarterback and were getting sacks, like they're doing this year. I mean, they're fourth in the NFL in sacks. But last year, they weren't exactly up there. They were more in pressures than sacks. Flipped that, became a lot more aggressive defensively. So things can change defensively. I don't know about offensively. I don't know about running game as much now, because last year was different. And asking a team to go from 3.5 yards a carry, we may have to look at it, and they might surprise us. They might go 4.3 per in the postseason. I don't know. It's not as likely, because I think of that line of the Patriots. Gannon was asked the age-old question that a lot of people are talking about right now, especially the talking heads. Tom Brady, is this the last year for Tom Brady, or how much left does he have left in the tank?
I don't think they're very good. I think he's still playing at a high level, guys. I think he's exercised great patience when you look at the challenges that they have faced this year. You know, the injuries along the offensive line, not being able to replace the tight end, this Lacoste and Izzo have been in there. They went out and got Benjamin Watson. You know, he's not the same player he was 4 or 5 years ago. So I just think he's shown great patience. I still think he enjoys playing the game. I think I think his legacy is important to him. I really think he's not going to walk away when he realizes that as bad as things are. I mean, this has been a very mediocre offense at best. But as bad as things are, they still have 10 wins. I mean, think about that. You know, as bad as things are, this is still a 10-win team at this point in the season. So they've got a defense that can win it all. I don't think there's any question about that. If they can find a little bit of rhythm and they can get a little bit of a roll here going as they head into January, there's no reason why they can't be a team to reckon with in the postseason.
Just think about them. I can't think of other 10-win teams this point in the season that gets the crap they're getting. Again, yeah, the caller, I'll play it again later, but, you know, early on, 50% Brady's fault. People are on him. Go read Terrence Paylor's column that he just put out. Look at what he says about Tom Brady. Is it him or is it the receivers? And he thinks it's the receivers. And again, Brady, 79% under pressure last year, when you get to him, it's almost an 80% quarterback rating when you have pressure. It's like 50, it's less than 50% this year, 49%. You know, rattle him. Make him think about it. Get in his head. Hit him. Hit him. Don't let him be clean like he was last year. This defense ought to be pissed, man. They ought to want a piece of that. He's not going anywhere. He's going to sit back here in the pocket. They should want Tom Brady. They should want to hit Tom Brady. Trust me. Belichick wants to hit Pat Mahomes. He wants to punch Pat Mahomes in the mouth. And that's what the Chiefs have to do. That's what Belichick thinks. That's the way he goes. I mean, art of war. Take care of the weaknesses. Expose them. Gannon, here's the other age-old question. Pat Mahomes, what's he seen from him the last 2 weeks? Some of you are melting down about it. You don't like the way he's playing. Here's what Rich Gannon had to say about one Patrick the last two games.
People get so worked up about numbers, right? We tend to focus on completion percentage and, you know, yards per attempt and all that kind of thing. And people look at last week's game and say, well, yeah, you know, he only had 15 completions. He only threw it for 175 yards and a touchdown. And, hey, that's not Patrick Mahomes. Yeah, but they scored 40 points. You know what I mean? And I think that, you know, the divisional games, it's the second time around, it's a team that knows him well. Did he miss some throws? There's no question. Was it his best performance? No. But, you know, they raced off to a big lead. They had a 21-0 lead at the half. I think they're trying to run the football a little bit. And I just think you just chalk it up. Look, you know, he's not playing to win the MVP. I mean, would it be, you know, certainly you want the production and the consistency to be in that conversation. I think he's the type of guy that will probably be in that conversation just about every year that he plays, if he can stay healthy. But at the end of the day, it's more important to win games and to put your team in the position where you've got a chance to really make a run in the postseason. They're 8-4. I'm surprised they haven't been more dominant at home. They're just 3-3 at home this year. They've got to finish strong in December and really build on those performances. And I think it's him as well. Look, missing a couple games is significant. It's not just him. It's everybody else, you know, getting the timing and the rhythm and those types of things. So I think if you ask Andy Reid, the least of his concerns and worries right now, it's Patrick Mahomes.
Can the Chiefs win on just the shoulder of Pat Mahomes, or do they need to add that running game, mix it up a little bit down the stretch?
It's hard because it takes, I don't want to say a flawless performance, but it takes a really good performance from Mahomes. You know, essentially you've got to carry the team, right? You've got to play, you know, you just got to play really, really well. You know, if you have a day where, you know, maybe you miss a couple throws, you throw a pick or something like that, then it becomes even more and more difficult. I think this is going to be a great challenge. You know, you go into Foxborough and you play the Patriots. You know you're going to play a team that's well-coached, that's well-prepared. You know, Belichick's whole thing is he's going to find out what you do best, and he's going to take that away. So my sense is he's going to go out of his way to try and take care of Kelce, take care of Tyreek Hill, and force Patrick Mahomes to throw the football to anyone other than those two, right? And I think that they're probably not as concerned about the run, but they are concerned about disrupting the timing and the rhythm of the passing game and affecting Patrick Mahomes in the pocket. That's going to be the key for the Patriots and for anybody else that plays the Chiefs, right? We want to, you know, who's their best player? Well, it's the quarterback. He's the trigger. Okay, well, what can we do to affect him? And I think it starts with, you know, getting around them, knocking them around. Now, even if you don't sack them, it's the hits, the hurries, and the knockdowns that are just as effective sometimes because they force him to speed up. And then you've got to make him, you know, play left-handed. Throw it to someone other than Kelce or Hill.
Great stuff from Rich Gannon. And later I'll bring up, he was asked to rank the top four teams. New England, Kansas City, Baltimore, and the Houston Texans. Where does he put them? I love his answers. Very surprised. I asked Serta that question yesterday to rank those top four teams. We sit here and we look at the playoffs and think, I mean, that's what we're sitting here thinking about now. That's what this game is all about, positioning. How did the Chiefs stack up? A measuring stick game. Serta, who's practicing and who's not with the Chiefs? You've got the latest.
Yeah, the Chiefs announced that Mo Claiborne, Rashad Fenton, and Damian Williams will not practice today.
Mm.
Frank Clark also being held out of practice, but they said it's because of an illness, not because of the shoulder injury that we were worried about.
That's okay. So, but that's still the uncertainty, you know what I mean? Would he have practiced today, limited or not, you know, with the shoulder? This illness thing, these teams take it seriously. If you got a little bit of that, you stay away. They don't want to get everybody sick because these guys are together all the time. That's why the Patriots had to take two planes to Houston when they played the Texans. Why? Because they own a couple and they can do that, but because people were sick. So they had the sick plane and the non-sick plane. That kind of would have sucked to have been on the sick plane, to be honest with you, because everybody's just sick. How many dudes were throwing up on that flight? You know what I mean? You sit there and deal with that. He could throw up too. The Seahawks had it too, and they ended up winning. But again, this is all about Bill Belichick and what's he going to do. It's the mindset of the chess match of Andy Reid and Bill Belichick. Bob Soucy, the voice of the New England Patriots, is coming on next. And we got Charts as well coming on after that. Get your fantasy football needs and your fix on that. But I want to know that. this chess match between Reed and Belichick. How do we see it? I mean, Bob's a big football dork like me. I love talking to him just about the strategy of Belichick and this, the Tom Brady, the fact they don't have a kicker, the fact they can't run. We'll get those questions answered by Bob Soucy. But here was NFL Network once again. Bill Belichick, this is this guy's mindset.
You can go all the way back to a few hundred years B.C. Sun Tzu, The Art of War, attack weaknesses, utilize strengths, and figure out what the strengths are on your team. There's some things you have to protect. Find the weaknesses of your opponent and attack.
That's that. It's that. It's that simple sometimes. Belichick goes with that art of war. Coming up next, Bob Soucy, voice of the New England Patriots. Brady versus Mahomes. Reed, Belichick. It's going to be a fun game. We'll get the latest from Bob next.
Middays, brought to you by Crossroads Investment Lending, 610 Sports Radio.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.